moving a little slow today, a little slower than usual. Might have something to do with that weather out there. I'm not quite sure. You know how sun can basically make you a little bit lazier than normal?
It's called mellow yellow.
Yeah, I've got the mellow yellow going on right now. Kind of be, but it's all right. It's Friday. It's happy hour. It's all right. Maybe some of you are headed home to a pool or maybe going to a beach after work. That'd be nice. I used to do that all the time.
You did?
After work. I used to just drive straight to the beach because it was...
Because the wife and kids were driving you crazy.
Huh?
The wife and kids were driving you crazy.
Right. It was great because most people were leaving it around this time. So going to the beach, the water's completely warm. It's beautiful. You have it all to yourself. It was great. Yes. And here on Long Island, there's no shortage of beaches.
There you go.
So we'll keep that in mind this weekend. I figured, you know, just a bit of word of advice. Yeah, a word of obvious advice, I suppose. But meanwhile, we've got a show to do. So let's focus on what we do on Fridays, which is how music changed. We've been covering the music of the Byrds. This is our fourth show. And what's really interesting about this, you probably agree with me, Heidi, it seems like every show, it almost seems like we're talking about a different band for each show. Because they've changed so much from time to time to time. You get the Byrds of Mr. Tambourine Man and Turn, 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 and then you get the band that's doing things like 8 Miles High and Mr. Spaceman and So You Want to Be a Rock and Roll Star. And now they're down to two members, as we've covered the history. There's only two members left standing. We've got Roger McGuinn and we've got Chris Hillman. And with just the two of them, I guess at this point in time, it's only natural if there is just two of them that the band would want to figure out some way to reinvent themselves, but nobody could have predicted the extent to which their sound would change. First thing they did is they went looking for a piano player. They thought it was a good idea. What happened was Roger McGuinn had the idea that maybe the next album would be a double album based upon the history of American music in the 20th century. They'd go all the way back to early jazz, and then they'd move on up to the present, you know, and touch on all these different things. So I thought it would be a good idea to get a piano player for that. So they started auditioning piano players. And this one guy, a really genial guy, shows up and gets along with the guys great. He's not really a phenomenal piano player. He's sort of like a faux jazz piano player. But they liked him, and they figured that he'd fit in. So they hired him to play piano. His name was Graham Parsons.
Oh.
Within a week of them hiring him, he stopped playing piano. And he started talking about country music and how he had a mission where he basically wanted to introduce country music to his generation. And it was basically the purpose of his life, in a sense. And he spent like weeks doing nothing but talking about country music to Roger and to Chris. And as they're talking, Chris Hillman loved the idea from the beginning because that was Chris's background. Chris came from a bluegrass background. So for him, it made sense that they would basically head off in a country direction. Roger wasn't as convinced at first, but when he realized that his own project was going to incorporate a decent amount of country music anyway and that the Byrds had already been there, it began to make more and more sense to him too. So he decided to basically follow in the direction that this new guy, Graham Parsons, was suggesting that they go in.
Get on board.
Now, before this, Graham Parsons had some experience. He was in something called the International Submarine Band, a very localized band. They did have a record contract, but they were not at all famous. Nobody really knew the band at this point in time. And after they had broken up, that's why he was auditioning, because he figured that by getting into a band like the Byrds, obviously, who wouldn't want to be in something which had a famous name? But it wasn't long that before Graham began to basically find himself the center of the band, because with only two other members, the only real person he had to worry about going up against as far as leader was Roger. So as soon as the thing began to form, you could also tell it was going to fall apart. But the one thing that came out of it is one album that does feature Graham Parsons. We're discussing that album in full, the entire album. More or less, anyway. I shouldn't say the entire album. We're going to play excerpts from that album, today, and to get the feel for it. The record is called Sweetheart of the Rodeo.
One of my favorites.
Great album. And Roger's contribution here is basically to give the Byrds fans something that they might expect from the Byrds. Do a Dylan cover. So Then seriously. And Dylan had a bunch of tracks that he had recorded up in Woodstock, which eventually came out as the Basement Tapes. They weren't officially released yet, but they were becoming commonly known through bootlegs. So Roger had heard that, and he decided that he would put out an official version of one of those songs, and that's the lead-off track to the album known as Sweetheart of the Rodeo. It's called You Ain't Going Nowhere.
Clouds so swift, rain won't lift, gate won't close, railings froze. Get your mind off winter time, you ain't going nowhere. Up your tent, you ain't going nowhere. A gun that shoots, tailgates, substitutes. Strap yourself to a tree with roots. You ain't going nowhere. Not keep all his kings supplied with sleep. We'll climb that hill no matter how steep when we get up to it.
Song you're perhaps familiar with. Great version there of You Ain't Going Nowhere with some really nice pedal steel playing there by a player named Lloyd Green. Graham Parsons' role on that track was actually to do nothing but play organ. That's him playing some, a little bit of organ in the background.
Okay. But got to give the man something to do.
Right, exactly. He's in the band now. The other member that joined at this point in time was a drummer named Kevin Kelly, who replaced Michael Clark, who had quit because he didn't think that the band was providing enough appropriate songwriting. It's just so funny how quickly things change, because then it was David Crosby and Jim McGuinn writing, you know, crazy hippie stuff, and now they're both gone, and within an album's time, they're making a country album. It just makes you wonder what Michael would have thought if he didn't bother to, you know, leave the fold so quickly. But now they've got Chris Hillman's cousin, Kevin Kelly, playing drums in the band, with, as I said, with Graham Parsons basically trying to convince the entire band to follow his muse to reclaim country music for his own generation. Now, in a way, Graham's obsession with this made a lot of sense, because there were very few musical organizations that were more staid and conservative than the Nashville scene of the mid-60s.
Absolutely.
They had no time at all for hippies or for anything like that. And they basically, the old guard did everything they possibly could to protect their ways. Now, Graham loved the music, but he really disliked the prejudice that was a part of that culture. And he thought that maybe by just showing that he was genuinely in love with it, that perhaps he'd be able to break down some of those walls. So one of the first things that he does is he persuades McGuinn and Hillman that they should basically pick up and move their recording to Nashville, record the album down there. So they did. They went down there. It's where they actually recorded some of these tracks, the track we just heard, the Dylan track, which is interesting as well, because Dylan, his last studio album at this point in time, was recorded in Nashville. That's where he recorded the lion's share of Blonde on Blonde.
Hmm.
So you would think that maybe this was beginning to make sense. Well, we'll get into the rest of it as we go on. But trying to find material for the record that was appropriate, Chris Hillman went a little bit deep and found an old traditional song that he figured he could bring to the table. So this is Chris Hillman singing lead on this track called I Am a Pilgrim.
This wearisome land, I've got a home in that yonder city, good Lord, and it's not made by hand. And a brother who have gone this way before. I am determined to go and see them, good Lord, over on that other shore. Jordan, just to beg my wearisome soul, if I can just touch the hem of his garment, good Lord, then I know he'd take me home. Not made by hand.
I think it's a recording that's incredibly true to the feel and the intent of what, if anybody who had ever recorded that song, it's quite beautiful.
Yeah.
And interesting for a rock band to be bringing, this was totally new to the people who were hearing it, because at this point in time, there was really no such thing as pure country music or country rock. There was, you could say Buffalo Springfield had an element of that to it, because they came, from a folk background and they might have had some country influences. But this is the first time that an album that's really flat out country, but with just a little bit of rock instrumentation, maybe because of the drumming that's in the background, became a part of it. Here's another song that that the Byrds had recorded when they were down there, another old traditional song. This is was originally, I believe, made famous by the Louvin Brothers, this song. Another one with now featured here is Clarence White, the session guitar player, who had played on the previous Byrds albums. And at this point, still not an official member, but he's all over this record. The Byrds version of The Christian Life.
My buddies tell me that I should have waited. They say I'm missing a whole world of fun. But I still love them and I sing with pride. I like the Christian life. I won't lose a friend by heeding God's call. For what is a friend who'd want you to fall? Others find pleasure in things I despise. I like the Christian life. My buddies shun me since I turned to Jesus. They say I'm missing a whole world of fun. I live without them and walk in the light. I like the Christian life. I won't lose a friend by heeding God's call. Who'd want you to fall? Others find pleasure in things I despise. I like the Christian life. I like the Christian life.
Wow, now the one imagine that song coming out now when it did in, you know, sometime after the Summer of Love. It's about as far away from a rock and roll sentiment as you could possibly get
right
on a youth album. I mean, everybody else was talking about how drug culture was beginning to seep in. And of course, this artist is satanic, or that artist is, you know, going to the dark side, or there's some sort of edge, or there's something, you know, basically about them that's really not good for the youth of America. And here are the Byrds singing about the Christian life, an old Louvin Brothers song. It was 180 degrees opposed to what was really happening at that point in time. And it actually ended up confusing their audience. The album, right, when it came out, got mixed reviews and didn't sell particularly well. It wasn't until decades later that the importance of this album really began to sink in. People looked back and they were like, you know, that whole country rock thing that eventually happened that more or less defined the state of rock and roll for maybe 15, if not 20 years. Where did that begin? And then you do the math and you're like, wow, the Byrds were really sort of cutting edge in that regard, weren't
they? Yes, they were.
3 years before the Eagles did anything, this album's out, maybe even 4 years. You know, just basically just way ahead of where music would eventually be going. Now, Gram Parsons, who was, like I said, the man who inspired this whole mission, was basically trying to figure out a way to incorporate all different styles into contemporary music through country music. For example, taking a soul song, you figured you'd even, like, you know, if you did it right, you could take a great soul record, do it in a country style, and you'd have something which would be brand new and youthful and would basically, theoretically make the audience for the Byrds expand exponentially because people are going to have their minds opened up to all these this variety of music that's all really going to be somehow brought together under the country umbrella. He called it cosmic American music. That was the phrase that he used all the time. And this song is probably one of the better examples of that. And it's the first time that you would have been hearing his voice on the album, singing lead on this track, because it was his idea to do it. But his voice actually got erased from the final takes, and Roger McGuinn put his voice over where Graham Parsons' voice originally was. We'll get into that more as we go deeper into the album, but here is You Don't Miss Your Water. Song was originally recorded by William Bell. I think you might have.
And the Drells?
What's that?
William Bell and the Drells?
No, William Bell.
That's Archie Bell.
Oh, Archie
right.
Bell.
Ooh, William Bell was one of the Stax Records guys. In fact, yeah, I was going to ask if you remembered when we played that when we covered
no.
Stax.
I wasn't paying attention.
I wasn't.
All right, then. That version, of course, is by the Byrds with Roger McGuinn on lead vocals, as it was released when the album came out.
You have yet to hear Graham Parsons' voice. We will on this next track, though. Not a song that he had written. Again, it's him basically going a bit deeper. At this point in time, we have not heard any original songs. And it's odd to note that on Sweetheart of the Rodeo, there is no original material at all on side one.
Oh, how about that?
All of it consists of traditional songs or songs written by others.
Well, they made some good selections, though.
What's that?
They made some good selections.
Oh, absolutely, yeah. It was, like I said, they were trying to go deep and try to show a lot of versatility with what they were doing, recording this in Nashville. Might be a good time to tell the story of what had happened when they had finished all of their recording sessions at the recording studio. They had managed to get themselves booked to play at the Grand Ole Opry, at the Ryman Auditorium. And that was a big deal. And the band knew what they were up against. So they actually all got haircuts for the event and came to the show on March 15th, 1968. They were introduced by a man named Tomple Glaser. Tomple would eventually go down as one of the quote-unquote outlaws with Willie Nelson and Waylon Jennings and everything. But at this point in time, Tomple was about as firmly in the establishment.
He was an in-law.
He was very, very much an in-law, not an outlaw in the country scene. So anyway, the Byrds show up, and they are immediately derided by the audience. They are basically looked at as hippie long hairs, and the crowd
jeering
totally starts shunning them, jeering them. After this song, instead of clapping, the audience starts to yell "tweet tweet" like birds. You know,
just how pleasant.
Really, just mocking them outright. It had gotten so bad that at one point, they had asked, what songs they were going to play, and they were scheduled to sing a Merle Haggard song called Sing Me Back Home. And in the middle of it, Graham Parsons just felt like, you know what, I don't even care. I'm going to do one of my own songs. So we did it, and at that point in time, just for doing that, they were told that they would never be allowed back into the Grand Ole Opry ever again.
How about that?
Don't ever expect to play at the Ryman Auditorium unless you do what you're told to do. So it didn't go well for the Byrds.
Apparently not.
Bit of a disaster, to say the least. Meanwhile, here's the first time you hear the voice of Graham Parsons as a bird singing "You're Still on My Mind."
The jukebox is playing a honky tonk song. One more I keep saying, and then I'll go home. What good will it do me? I know what I'll find. An empty bottle, a broken heart, and you're still on my mind. The people are dancing and having their fun, and I sit here thinking about what you have done. To try and forget you, I've turned to the wine. An empty bottle, a broken heart, and you're still on my mind. Alone and forsaken, so blue I could cry. I just sit here drinking till the bottle runs dry. What good will it do me? I know what I'll find. An empty bottle, a broken heart, and you're still on my mind. Broken heart, and you're still on my mind.
Graham Parsons on lead vocals there from the Byrds album, Sweetheart of the Rodeo. This is part four in our series covering the music of the Byrds. It's been great fun. I hope you're enjoying this. If you want to catch up on anything you missed, check out our website, AmericanHitNetwork.com. All the older shows can be found there if you're interested on catching up on something you may have missed. Now, the last song on side one was also, as I said, everything on side one was a cover song. There was an old Woody Guthrie tune. Something that Roger, well, when he was Jim McGuinn, was doing back when he was a folkie, thought it would be a good thing that could work on this album. So he brought this into the sessions and got it onto the album. It features Roger on lead vocals. It's called Pretty Boy Floyd.
Him in a wagon as into town they rode. And along come a deputy sheriff in a manner rather rude, using vulgar words of language his wife she overheard. Then pretty boy grabbed the log chain, the deputy grabbed a gun, and in the fight that followed deputy down. Then he ran through the trees and bushes, he lived a life of shame. Every crime in Oklahoma was added to his name. He ran through the trees and bushes on the Canadian River shore, and many a starving farmer opened up his door. On a Christmas day, a whole carload of groceries with a letter that could say, you say that I'm an outlaw, you say that I'm a thief, we'll use Christmas dinner for families on relief. As through this life you travel, you'll meet some funny men. Some will rob you with a six gun and some with a fountain pen. It's through this life you ramble, it's through this life you roam. You'll never see an outlaw take a family from your home.
A song that you may be familiar with, I know Bob Dylan did a version of it, an old Woody Guthrie tune, as it appears here on the album Sweetheart of the Rodeo by the Byrds. Now, I had mentioned, of course, that when they played at
the Opry?
At the Grand Ole Opry at the Ryman Auditorium, that they had been jeered and booed and told that they weren't allowed back. This is why this is the song that Graham Parsons leaned into, and they were planning on doing a Merle Haggard song, and the song that he just said, "Oh, screw it, I'm going to do what I want to do. They're not going to basically even welcome us or be polite or even decent to us. I may as well do one of my own." It's a beautiful song that Graham had written that appears that kicks off side two of the album, the first original song, actually on the album, "Sweethearts of the Rodeo," and it also features Graham on lead vocals. It's called Hickory Wind.
In South Carolina, there are many tall I remember the oak tree that we used to climb. But now when I'm lonesome, I always pretend I'd started out younger. At most everything, all the riches and pleasure. What else can life bring? But it makes me feel better each time to begin, calling me home. Hard way to find out that trouble is real in a faraway city with a faraway feel. But it makes
has now entered the lexicon of classic country, but written by Gram Parsons, who had been shunned so rudely by everybody in Nashville. Now, the band at this point, after the Nashville experience, they came back to Los Angeles, sort of with their tails between their legs, feeling uncomfortable about everything. But Gram, instead of basically backing down, started to try to exert as much control as possible over the direction of the band to continue it on the path that it had been on. One of the first things that he was trying to do was to convince the band to recruit the a pedal steel player, make them a permanent member of the band, rather than hiding these guys to come in and do session work, bring them into the band, make them a permanent member. And McGuinn, you know, basically demurred on that. He's like, no, thanks. I don't really think we need to do that. Which left Gram wondering if he was really basically that backing him with what his own ideas were for the band. Now, of course, this was Roger's band for years.
Right.
So for Gram to come in and start pushing Roger around, I think Roger began to feel a certain amount of resentment about it. So the next thing that happened was Parsons then said, okay, well, if you're not going to hire a pedal steel player, then I need to get paid more money because I'm doing all the work. So you got to basically give me a raise. And then he also said, and when the record comes out, I want you to call it Gram Parsons and the Birds.
What?
So.
Oh, that went over like a lead balloon.
The band basically began to get really fed up with this. They said, okay, basically, his days are numbered at this point in time. They're basically really, you know, beginning to question, you know, whether or not he's a team player at all, or that sort of thing.
Or his sanity.
So meanwhile, well, that is going on. Let's see. This is one of the songs. Actually, let me play this first. This is a track that is written by Gram Parsons where they actually replaced the vocals. Now, what had happened at this exact same time is that stories started to come in from another producer who was involved with Gram when he was in the International Submarine Band. And he said, I still have him under contract. You can't put him. He can't be in a Birds album. Well, that was eventually disputed and dismissed. But the fact of the matter is, at the time, this was basically what the band feared. And there's two different quotes here that I could read about what had actually happened, about how it went down. Gary Usher was the producer, and this is what he saw. McGuinn was a little bit edgy that Parsons was getting a little bit too much out of this whole thing. He didn't want the album to turn into a Graham Parsons album. He wanted to keep Graham's voice in there, but he also wanted the recognition to come from Hillman and McGuinn, obviously. You don't just take a hit group and interject a new singer for no reason. There were legal problems, but they were resolved, and the album had just the exact amount of Graham Parsons that McGuinn and Hillman and I wanted. Now, when I asked Roger about it, he said, well, there was genuine concern that we would get sued if we kept Graham's vocal on it. So we put mine on, and then the contract dispute went away. Basically, it was a misunderstanding. But then he goes on to say, I wouldn't have had any involvement at all if it had been up to Graham. He was taking over the band, so we really couldn't let that happen.
Contradicted himself.
Right, so it kind of like covers both sides of the coin in that regard, doesn't it? Doesn't he? Well, as it eventually happened, I mean, this is the fact that it was done at all just infuriated Parsons, something that bothered him right up until the end of his life. He was giving interviews and still talking about how the Byrds came in and erased the vocals and basically screwed up all of his songs, even ones that he had written. This song, 100 Years From Now, is a Graham Parsons composition, but the lead vocal is sung by McGuinn with Hillman harmonizing. Right then, with that track, we will now move on to the album that followed Sweetheart of the Rodeo to cover it up. At this point, it was their seventh album. It was called Dr. Byrds and Mr. Hyde. An odd title. The worst-selling album of their catalog. Not necessarily a bad album, but an album that more or less the content could easily be discerned by what the title is implying. It seemed like there were a good number of different bands at work all at the same time on this album. Yeah. They had reverted back to some psychedelic music on this record, while also trying to hold on to the country influences that were brought in by Graham Parsons. So it made the album and made the band sound a little bit schizophrenic regard. Here's one of the tracks from that album. Again, it's an old folk song that Roger McGuinn had dug up, called Old Blue, a song about a dog. I think you might remember this as one of those anthology of folk music songs, yes, if you're a big fan of that. The Byrds version of that tune here is Old Blue. From the album Dr. Byrds and Mr. Hyde. Now, this album, Graham Parsons is gone, long gone, and here's this pretty much the story of how that came to pass. When they finished recording Sweetheart of the Rodeo, the band had an international tour set up, and one of the first stops was in England, and the band had flown to England to do their show, and when they were there, Graham Parsons had met Keith Richards and Mick Jagger, and became very friendly with them. The rest of the band thought perhaps maybe even too friendly. Graham Parsons was making plans to move into Keith Richards' house for a while.
Oh, my.
But one of the things that had come up is that on that tour, the Byrds were scheduled to play in South Africa. And Mick and Keith got in Graham's ear and said, you know, what are you going to do that for? It's, you know, you're going to be playing to segregated audiences. It's not going to be cool. You shouldn't do it. So Graham came back and told the band that they should cancel that show. And the band said, that's not exactly what's not going to happen. We have guarantees that we're going to be able to, you know, basically play to mixed audiences. And besides, it'll be a great education. We can go there and we'd learn something. Why would we not want to do that? Well, Graham says, well, I'm giving you an ultimatum. We're not doing it. And if you do it, I quit. Well, then they said, well, then you know what? You know, goodbye. So that was it. Graham Parsons was booted out of the band. So they had to basically, they brought in a roadie to play rhythm guitar with the band. And it turns out that the whole South African tour thing was a total disaster for the band. They were lied to, first of all, left and right. They played to nothing but segregated audiences. And the Byrds politics became apparent from the stage. So the audience was totally disinterested and disliked. Thought that they were essentially a band that was unprofessional, unprepared, because they didn't have any. Graham was gone. They didn't even have any a well-rehearsed band.
Oh, no.
So everything about it went wrong. So they ended up coming back. And now what you hear is that not only did they basically, you know, the roadie went, but now they brought in Clarence White, finally, as a permanent member of the band, to bring him in to play. And what you hear on this next track is Clarence White's influence. Clarence White had, I didn't realize this until I was doing some investigation. It was him and Graham Parsons that had started to do some work on trying to create an effect on a guitar that could make it sound like a pedal steel by putting a spring on it that would help you to bend the B string. Uh-huh. So these days it's called the B bender.
B bender, yep.
Turns out that Clarence White is an integral person in the creation of the B bender.
Huh.
Here he is playing on this instrumental track called Nashville West. The album Dr. Byrds and Mr. Hyde, showing the Byrds as a band trying to basically regain some of their footing that they had, that they felt that they had lost when they released Sweethearts of the Rodeo. The album really did very little to help their place in the counterculture, where they just a year ago were the absolute epicenter of the counterculture. Now, through songs like The Christian Life and such, they were an anomaly. They seemed like they were so far outside of the counterculture that they made no sense. And at the same time, they made zero inroads to the country music establishment. So the record really just basically, in a sense, put the band in a very difficult place. This album is Roger trying desperately to see what he can do to bring it back together. He's the only lead singer on this album. He's the only voice that sings lead. As I said, Clarence White was brought in to play guitar. And one thing that's interesting is Clarence wasn't very happy with the drummer, Kevin Kelly, who was from the previous incarnation of the band. So he asked to bring in the drummer that he had known, whose name happened to be Gene Parsons. No relation, but, you know, Graham Parsons, Gene Parsons. Very confusing to those on the outside, not really wondering what is going on. But this next track is a song that was actually written by Roger McGuinn and Gram Parsons together because of what had happened in their Nashville experience. After they had gotten booed out of the Opry, they ended up going to radio stations, at least, to try to promote their new single. And they had this this one station, WSM. That's the big country station down there. And one of their famous DJs, Ralph Emery, brought the band in to discuss their song with them. And he pretty much spent the entire interview mocking them and their music.
Oh, my.
To their faces. Was trying to decide whether or not he even figured it would even be worth it, worth his time to even play their music. Eventually, he gave in, and after it got done playing, he dismissed the song on the air, basically telling the band that they were mediocre at best.
Nice.
And then the band was basically walked away. It was just one of those horrible, horrible experiences where nothing goes right. So the band, again, felt really insulted by this. So Gram and Roger wrote a song about that experience, or particularly how they felt about this DJ being a good old boy and how he was never going to allow these young kids into his inner circle. The song is called Drugstore Truck Driving Man, and we'll leave you with this song, and we hope you can join us next week. Have a great weekend. Stay cool, bye, everybody. Bye-bye.
He's a drugstore truck driving man. He's the head of Ku Klux Klan. When summer rolls around, he'll be lucky if he's not in town. Well, he's got him a house on the hill. He plays country records till you've had your fill. He's a fireman's friend. He's an all-night DJ, but he sure does think different. The records he plays. He's a drugstore truck driving man. He's the head of the Ku Klux Klan. When summer rolls around, he'll be lucky if he's not in town. Truck driving man. He's the head of the Ku Klux Klan. When summer rolls around, he'll be lucky if he's not in town. He's been like a father to me. He's the only DJ you can hear after three. And roll band, and why he don't like me, I can't understand. He's a drugstore truck driving man. He's the head of the Ku Klux Klan. When summer rolls around, he'll be lucky if he's not in town. He'll be lucky. Not in town.
This one's for you, Ralph.